And welcome to another in the series of Two Time Labs podcasts. And as you probably know, if you've been following the series and reading my blog, I was impressed by a blog post that I read based on a quote. It said that this fellow who used to work with in the White House under President Bush said that President Bush schedules his time in 15-minute intervals. He used to schedule his time in 15-minute intervals. I found that intriguing because I also found that college students schedule their time using a similar method. So fast forward to a couple of articles that I've written, and I came across the work of Pat Brands. And Pat is a unique individual. He's a native of New Orleans who happens to actually be living in France. He teaches at the Grenoble Graduate School of Business. He's a contributor to Forbes magazine, and he's also the author of Master the Moment, where he interviewed 50 CEOs. So we're going to extend a warm welcome to Pat and ask him several of the questions that have been sort of buzzing around. Pat, welcome to Two Time Labs podcast.
Oh, thank you very much, Francis. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Did I hear a French accent that you just slipped in?
Maybe so. You'll hear that from time to time. My phrasing might be French, and some of the words I say, yeah.
That's so interesting. I, of course, I'm curious. How in the world did you end up living in France?
Well, it really has nothing to do with growing up in New Orleans. I just my first job outside of school was in France. I was graduating in 1986 from Loyola University in New Orleans, I heard about this job in France where they were looking for new software engineers to come over and help them work on some work on their software tools, which are actually productivity tools, and then go up over to the United States and help them set up over there. So that's what I did. And I sort of met some people and built my life halfway between France and the United States, and now I'm back here.
Fantastic. It sounds a little bit like my journey to the States and back here to Jamaica. It's just that we're opposite sides of the world at the moment.
Yes. Well, the weather's better over where you are, probably.
Yeah, it's a balmy 82 degrees or so. And
okay.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Well, onto your book, though. I have full respect for researchers who go out in the field and sit down with a large number of people in the target audience. I know it takes a lot of work and it can make a tremendous difference. But what led you to do that research with 50 CEOs and ultimately to write your book?
Okay. Well, several things. I reached that point from several paths. The first is that I've always observed that some people do things faster than others, and that's one thing, being fast or efficient. And I've also observed that some people tend to reach their goals better than other people. And those people that reach their goals are usually less tired than those who don't reach their goals. Those who tend to be frustrated in life are also the most tired and fatigued and worn out. And, you know, I tell you, you want somebody to do something, if you want to schedule something with somebody, find the most busy person you know, and that person will have time for you. You know, two people who do a lot are the ones who can give you their time. So I've observed that. So that's one path. The second path is that, well, I've observed also people talking about time management, and I've seen maybe two different approaches to that. One is the type that says, look at what I do, look how I'm very efficient, just follow me and you can do a good job yourself. And the second type is a totally theoretical type who maybe study psychology, do research, and more top-down. Okay, so there's a sort of the guru type, and there's a more top-down type. There's other types in between. So, but anyway, I figured that the best thing to do is to be empirical, to go out and look for people who are visibly getting more done than others. And by the way, I'm not advocating that people go out and get more done. That's not my goal. My goal is that I want to help people reach their goals. And right. Some goals might be to have a good time, you know, to lay back in the sun. That's a great goal to me.
Here in Jamaica.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not necessarily about getting things done, but if you observe the people who get a lot done and also have time for sports and a family and they're not really frustrated, then they'll probably give you a pretty good clue as to what some of the human dynamics are involved in managing your time well. Mm. And again, I don't use the term managing your time in terms of being efficient. I use it in terms of being able to reach your goals. That you, first of all, you're able to formulate your goal, And you formulate your goals in a way that's pretty consistent with who you are. And then you work towards your goal at a relaxed pace and reach them. And then you go on to the next one. You know?
Right.
What I advocate. So I figured, what I noticed is that I figured I would look for an empirical, I would do this empirically and look for a group of people that are good at this. And so I said, okay, I can go look for athletes. They usually reach their goals, but they usually, there's a lot of talent involved with athletes. And I said, okay, how about like good housewives that are efficient or good farmers or plumbers or electricians. But then the problem with that is they're only in their own corner doing things very well. So I said, why not CEOs? Because CEOs not only have to get things done and reach their goals, but they also observe 1,000 other people. Okay?
Wow.
So that's one thing. They're always observing other people and they know what it takes. So it's not just their own view. And then the other thing about the people I chose was that there were always people who had a life outside of work. They weren't tired, they weren't worn out, they had a family, they had kids, they spent time with their kids, and they usually had kids, and then they all did sports. Almost every one of them did sports and ate well. So it's not just a bunch of workaholics.
Right, people who are just working themselves into the ground.
Right,
and then
not at all.
Being effective in one area.
To me, that's a losing proposition.
Right, but tell me something. You know, the best selling books out there, it seems, are of the first kind, the guru kind, where someone says, just follow what I do and you'll be good.
Right.
Why didn't you take that approach? Like, you know, interview one CEO and say, hey, follow him or follow her.
Yeah.
You know, why go with the 50?
Well, it's probably, if I took the approach of interviewing just one CEO, first of all, there's probably only 5 people in the world that anybody would buy a book on. You mean, there's only 5 or 6 personalities in the world that people would go for that on. You would have to be a totally household name. And that's already...
Bill Gates didn't return your call.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did try Bill Gates, by the way. And I tried Steve Jobs. So there's that. And then the other thing is, well, you just look at one point of view, and there's talent. You have to factor out talent. I mean, okay, now, my goal wasn't to have a bestseller, right? It's because there's a lot of time management books out there. My goal is to do a pretty good study on this. And so if I, you know... Okay, you can get a best. Well, not just anybody can get a bestseller, of course. But it wasn't my goal. And if I wanted to do that, I would have wrote it more simply. Right. I wouldn't have included the psychology research I included, because I did include psychology research also.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, I applaud you for going the hard route, because 50 interviews is a heck of a lot of. It's a heck of a lot of work, and it's much harder than just talking to one person.
Yes.
It's much harder than just saying, hey, everybody, just follow me.
Yeah.
But I think the results, and some of which you share with us today, are so deep and far-reaching that we can have conversation after conversation, because you have done the legwork for us.
Great.
So thanks for doing that.
No problem. I'm tired.
But tell me something. How did you select, did you use French CEOs or did you use an international group? How did you select your sample group?
Only one or two, maybe three were French. Most of them were American. It was a lot by the phone, on the phone, okay? I met a few, but most of it was on the phone because you can't get around. It's not logistically possible. So, for example, Gertrude Boyle, the CEO of Columbia Sportswear, called her on the phone. She was very easy to get a hold of, actually. Don't tell your listeners that, by the way.
Wow.
I just did. In my case, it was pretty easy to get on the phone. Bill Gates was not, or Michael Dell, I couldn't get on the phone. But there were some big ones, you know. There were 3 French, a few from the UK. One was the former president of Belize. Most of them in the U.S.
Wow. Fascinating. In Belize. My father's from Belize, actually. Makes it sort of brings it close to home, because you're not quite in the Caribbean, but you came really close.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And tell me, what were the major findings of your book?
Major findings? Well, the first thing is that, I say there are 11 powerful notions. Okay. And the first one is, rather than trying to do the right things, try to do things right. No, I'm sorry. Rather than trying to do things right, try to do the right things. Now, that's a new saying. Probably the first person to say that was, what's his name? He was a management guru. He wrote a lot of books on management. Oh, God, I can't.
Peter Drucker?
Yeah, Peter Drucker. I'm pretty sure he might have been, he may have been the first person to say that, or he was the first person to popularize that. So, yeah. So in other words, rather than doing things right, choose the right things to do, and that's much more powerful, because you can be doing things very well, and it could be a totally wrong thing to do.
Right.
And sometimes it's better just to do nothing if you're not sure what to do, right? So it's better to think and work smart. And I'll give you an example where that kind of shows that point. If you're working 40 hours a week, which is a standard American, that's what we call the average work week in America, and then you now work 44 hours a week, in the best case, you're 4% more productive, right? You get 4% more, 10%. You get 10% more done, 10%, okay? Yeah. Now, that doesn't account for the difference that you witness between people, right? What you witness between people is an order of magnitude difference, not like 10%, it's like 1,000 times. Like some people get 1,000 times more done than another person. Because it's right. usually because they choose where to apply their effort much more carefully.
Right.
Right? You know? Right. So just because you're the CEO of 10,000 people doesn't mean you're working harder than anybody else in the company. That's not true. So the first point is choose where you apply your effort very carefully. That's okay. Right. So there's a few things like that. The other is to manage your attitude. And another one that people really catch on to is the idea that you can have two attitudes towards what you're doing. One is what we call a performance-oriented attitude. And this one comes from psychology research and with Carol Dweck of Stanford University. Notably, she's probably the leader in this research. Performance-oriented attitude means that you're doing something to prove that you're really smart, that you have some capability, either innate or something that you acquired before. Okay? Now, when you do that, your ego is attached to the task because you're trying to prove that you're self-worth, right? Now, if you take the learning-oriented attitude, that is that if you instead say, I can learn what it takes to do this job, it's something that's learnable, that's much more powerful because your ego is not at stake. As soon as your ego is at stake, you don't do your job as well, okay? And so I learned that from the CEOs, and I've also learned that from, for example, Gertrude Boyle of Columbia Sportswear. Her husband died, and she had to learn how to do business at the age of 48 years old.
Wow.
And she turned that into Columbia Sportswear because she had a learning-oriented attitude. She never said, well, I already know how to do it. I'm brilliant. She said, you just have to learn it. You just take your time and learn it. So that's another thing. A lot of people think these CEOs are really egomaniacs, and I'm sure they have some ego, but they're not. It's not the driving force. They also do. Their goals are also more about. They're more community oriented. You know, they're team players a lot of times, and so they don't attach their ego to everything they do. Really.
Yeah, you know, you would think just watching the news or listening to the press that a CEO around the area of his or her personal effectiveness would just basically say, you know, I do things the best in my company and everybody is just needs to follow me.
Yeah.
You would think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the first impression.
And I have nothing to learn because, after all, I'm the CEO.
Right. But, you know, if you take that idea to its extreme, then if everybody hired people that they were smarter than, if everybody you hired was less intelligent than you, then you'd have a company of people who aren't very smart, right? Right?
Unless you're really, really bright.
Right. Now, that does happen sometimes when the person is the founder of the company, like Bill Gates.
Right.
But if you're, most of the time you're not the founder of your company, and most of these guys know to surround themselves with people who are smarter than they are. Right? So the goal is not to try to be the smartest or the most talented, but to be able to work with everybody, you know, to say, okay, we can learn this stuff. We'll just learn it. Let's just steadily work towards our goal.
When it comes to their personal productivity, are they big learners then?
Yeah. And that's one thing. They're big learners. Most of them say, I'll try to learn something new every day. Every one of them does get some exercise, I would say on the average of an hour three times a week. So 3 hours.
Physical exercise.
Yeah. So 3 hours a week in an hour chunks, right? Something like that on the average. Some of them are marathon runners. Some of them are triathletes. Seriously. And then the other thing is they all eat light lunches and they all sleep well at night. Okay, so these are three things.
Enough hours. Yeah. They don't dip in for a couple of hours and then crank it back up.
No, because that's another one of the powerful notions is strive for sustainability. Do things that you can sustain. If you're cramming like you do at school, you're not going to be able to sustain that. Okay, that'll last about a week. Your body. I did a lot of research in sleep too, by the way, for the book. So I researched sleep, psychology, health and fitness, and time management and motivation and things like that. And you take on a sleep debt. And so if you lose a few hours of sleep, that's going to catch up to you. You got to pay that back.
And they're cognizant of this, or
I don't know if they really know, if they would put that in word. Well, it's yes, but they didn't do the research on it. They know it somehow instinctively, or some of them might have researched it. Some of them did, but they, that's the way they do things. They realize that, most of them are very cognizant of time management. They know, they sit around and think about time management. And so they're cognizant of these things. They know about running, getting exercise, because by the way, most of us need about 7 hours of sleep a night. And so that means there's about 149 hours a week, right? And 7 times 24, I'm sorry, I lost that number. 28,
7 hours, 28.
Yeah, 148, I think it was. But so you have about 120 hours a week of waking hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you do 3 hours of exercise a week, that's not even 5%, not even 3% of your week.
Not even.
Right. And so that gives you a payback. By the way, I just went running before you talked. That's how I did it too. So if that pays you back in terms of clarity of thinking, and feeling good and energy levels, okay, and it's an antidepressant too. And by the way, another thing that they all do is they all spend time. They all have think time, and that think time might be, for example, when you go running. It might be going out for a walk. It might be quiet time. It might be every one of them is cognizant that they need think time. And they find, everyone has a unique way of finding think time. Okay, so that goes back to the idea that it's not about being the most efficient. It's about being the most effective. And that means choosing where you apply your energy.
Right. Well, that takes me to the subject of our of our program today, which is, how do CEOs, if they're that intentional about doing the right thing, does your research sort of back up the notion that CEOs schedule their time very carefully and very sort of consciously?
Yeah, they schedule their time. Well, they schedule their time. All of them have an assistant to help them. Okay, and all of them swear by their assistants.
Okay.
And so their assistants are very good at scheduling and filtering. And they always schedule about 20, they always pad their schedules with, I don't know, something like 20% for emergencies or unknowns. Okay? You don't know. You can never schedule. And most of them know that any plan lasts about 3 months. So even your schedule for next week, there's going to be errors in it. So you need to buffer it. And most of them add about a 20% buffer for, it depends on the line of work you're in, of course, right?
Right,
but a 20% buffer for emergency unknowns. Let's call it.
Mm-hmm. So the administrative assistant then is obviously someone they don't hire the first person from school. They pick someone who's experienced and been around the block and knows how to work with a CEO in this manner.
Outstanding. Absolutely. I'm sorry. That's it. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, they are outstanding because they are unusual personal assistants, right?
Right. They have to be outstanding personal assistants. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, and then does a CEO, or maybe you could give us an idea of the percentage, would they accept an appointment with someone, and put it into their calendar directly, or do they go pass everything through their admin assistant?
Well, they pass. There's exceptions to the rule, but they pass everything to the admin assistants. For example, some of them I would know the email address from somebody else, or get in contact. I might even know them by myself, and then I would send them a message. They say, "Okay, let's schedule it," and they copy their assistant. So they schedule the call for their assistant. Okay. and you work with their system to schedule the call. Yeah, they are, it's almost invariably. It would be unusual if they intervened and as because that would throw their system off.
Right. So they maintain a certain discipline.
Right. They maintain a certain discipline. They count on their assistants for a lot. And the other thing they count on their assistants for is to filter. And for example, one of them had a well. At least one of them discussed this, and the other ones alluded to it. You have a system of priorities. You might call them red, green, and yellow, or one, two, three. And one is something that I got to get done. Two is, okay, it's medium priority. I should try to get it done. And third is, well, I can drop it. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Now, that brings me to another subject, by the way. None of them were perfectionists, okay? And they all said you should not be a perfectionist because you got to live with a lot of ambiguity. And so when you have to say no to people, that goes along with being a perfectionist. You have to be able, not being a perfectionist, you have to be able to say, no, I can't do it. Or I have to drop this. Some things just won't get done. But you have to choose which things don't get done. Now, some people freak out when they don't get some things done. Like, I have students who are professionals.
True.
And they think that they want to get, even if you tell them, we're not going to grade you on this, please just do it as much as you can and stop in 15 minutes and let's discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can't live with that idea that they're not going to complete it in 15 minutes. It's called that's kind of a technique called time boxing. Instead of saying we're going to get everything done, let's say we're going to do everything in 15 minutes, and whatever we get done in 15 minutes is defined as it. Right? Some people have trouble with that notion. Now, so the CEOs have to get used to the idea that some things aren't going to get done. So in order to get the most important things done, I'm just going to have to drop those least important things. And so they have their assistants who are very good at prioritizing. They sit down and define the rules together.
Interesting. I had a whole, almost a argument in a time management program that I led. Mm-hmm. I had a participant who told me that she needs to be able to get everything done.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you go crazy. she put her foot down.
Mm-hmm.
For her, it was a matter of almost like integrity.
Well,
if I say I'm going to get it done, I have to get it done.
Yeah.
Extremely stressful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I suspect depleting after a while, no?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you want to be credible, so you don't want to, if you don't get things done, you want to tell people you're not going to get them done, unless so that, you know, you want to build up a credibility, but yeah, definitely. If you think you can get everything done, you can't, and so you're going to wind up maybe not getting the important things done. So you have to start out with the notion that you're not going to get everything done, and that gives you the freedom to choose which ones you're going to work hardest on.
Right. What would they say to the gurus out there? Because there are gurus who say, don't even try to schedule. Instead, just work from lists. They say, because if you try to schedule, too many things change in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You end up having to change your schedule. And if you have to change your schedule, that means that you shouldn't have one to begin with. So don't schedule anything other than just meetings alone.
Right.
What would they say to the gurus who argue that you should only schedule appointments and nothing else?
You mean the ones who say you shouldn't schedule appointments?
Right.
Okay. Well, I would think, they would say that's not true. I mean, it's, you know, there's some truth to that notion, but I think what it is these gurus are trying to make a point by giving an extreme.
Okay.
They're stating an extreme, and just like everybody does in this kind of time management stuff, you state extremes, you know, you say do this, but you don't mean all the time, right?
Some of them do.
Well, okay, but you, it's ridiculous not to have a schedule. We wouldn't have had this call if I didn't have a schedule.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, so, I mean, there's things that do have to occur at certain times.
And I imagine that some of those CEOs do their running in the middle of the day, right?
Yeah, they exactly.
You just went running. It's the middle of your day.
You do it in the middle of the day. Yeah, of course. And so
it still happens that lunchtime is the best time.
Yeah, you say this sort of thing. You know, the president of France, Sarkozy, used to run an hour a day, no matter what happened. He said it. And okay, so what? You should be able to manage that. You can't possibly get everything done anyway. And that's an important thing to do is to take care of your health.
So, and that's when some of them, you said, would do their thinking time. Did others actually schedule thinking time that was apart from that's just straight desk time, for example?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It depends on how you think. You know, sometimes your ideas are in the car. Yeah.
True.
But getting back to your point about this idea of scheduling versus having a... There's another way of doing this. Instead of schedule, you can have like a to-do list, and we call it the top five list. Mm-hmm. So you have five things that are the top most important things for you today, and a lot of the CEOs use this. Well, you can have both. You can have a schedule and a top five list. And then the top five list, the power of that is that you just put it in your pocket and you pull it out. Every time you want to remember what you were supposed to do today, you pull it out and look at it, right? And that reminds you. Now, you're not going to get everything done, but at least you remember what you were supposed to be doing.
If they have a top five list, then does their assistant have that same top five list, or do they just maintain a schedule typically?
The assistant would maintain the schedule. Top five list is personally, you might jot it down. It might include spending time with your son. That might include, it's a mix of personal and professional. And when why five, by the way? Because five things is a number that you can keep in your head. And, well, you do put it on a list, but five things is about the number of things you can manage, according to this psychology research.
And would they then ask their assistant to schedule time to do those five things, or are those five things after work or between meetings?
Oh, it could be both, a little of both. Yeah, it's an art; it's not a science.
Yes, yeah, they're no hard and fast rules.
Yeah, because anyway, by the way, the idea of scheduling things and the idea of doing things, getting things, everything done is you don't know what's going to happen. You really don't know the future, and you really don't know how long tasks take. You're just making a guess at it. So don't beat yourself up over being late on things, right? If you're going to be late on things, okay, that happens. But what was the deadline in the first place? Maybe it was a nonsense deadline. So, you know.
Right. There is a school school of thought that says that you should only work on something for as long as you have schedule. And when your schedule says stop, you have to stop.
That's a school. That's a technique too, sure. Depends. That's a time box. Yeah. So, I mean, you've got to use a combination of these things depending on the task at hand and depending on the priorities you have. Sometimes it makes sense to do that. You don't want to run away. I think you need to be able to compartmentalize. And that time boxing helps you compartmentalize. It says, okay, now I can put my mind at ease. I've done everything I can in there. And I'm going to go on to something else. And I'm going to completely change my working sphere.
Right. And I almost perhaps need a break from the thing I was working on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Good. That makes good sense.
Yeah.
There's also a question that I've heard bounded around, which is, personal time, you know, time on weekends, for example, or vacations, and how many CEOs actually schedule the time outside of work?
Every one of them.
Every one?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, you mean schedule? Every one of them takes time outside of work.
No, I mean schedule. How many of them actually say, I'm going to spend 5 hours with my kids this weekend, I'm going to spend 2 hours with my wife on this particular night?
Well, I don't know. I didn't ask that question, but I get the sense that most of them allow spontaneous time. They don't sit around and plan every second of the day, especially on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, one of the most powerful things you can do is work well with people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're sitting around looking at the watch all the time, you're not going to be working well with people.
Right,
relations are the most important thing. That's how my business school students this all the time. The best thing you get out of a business school is that you make contacts. And if you learn to work with people, then you're going to do well in business.
Right. And part of that has to do with giving 100% of your attention to the person in front of you.
Absolutely. And so that clashes with, you know, sitting around following schedule. Of course, you don't want to always go over, you know, but you want to tell them, okay, I have something else to do, but you want to be sitting there looking at your clock and saying, okay, we have 5.2 seconds or whatever. You know, I have
make it quick.
30.3 seconds to spend with my child today.
There are lots of CEOs who aren't CEOs see them saying, we have 5 minutes left, I have another meeting.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, he's always so you know, he's always ready to do something else.
Well, that's not good. Because you're not paying attention to what's in front of you.
Right. And our minds, many of them,
huh?
Go ahead.
Our minds work such that our minds, you need to have a sense of presence, right? You can't do two things at once.
Right, you can't watch the clock and be present at the same time.
Absolutely not.
Now, how many of them take the next step and say, use their administrative assistant to bring them, bring a meeting to a close, so they have them knock on the door or call them, or how many of them use that technique so they don't have to watch the clock during the meeting?
Some of them do, yeah. I don't know how many. I didn't really ask that question, but I know that some of them mentioned that. So that you know, there's different techniques. One is you have your you have a signal from your, you might be, that you get a call, and your secretary says, your assistant says, you have a call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get you out of the meeting. Okay, that's an old one. That's an old one. But no, they'll have this. Yeah, they definitely have their. I guess all of them really would have their assistants say, "By the way, you have this now."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. That frees your mind because you can't be doing everything. It frees your mind to be able to think of the task in front of you. That's the number one notion in time management, is to be able to pay full attention to what you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Be fully engaged.
Be fully engaged. And by the way, what is it that we're after in the end? We're after happiness, right? So you're not going to be happy in your work if you sit around looking at your watch. If you can be fully engaged and be present, because all we really have in life is the presence, right?
Exactly.
The present. So if you're not doing that, then you're not winning. I don't care how much money you make. It's not about money. You're not having fun. You're not enjoying. You know, there's not personal satisfaction.
Right. Right. Absolutely right. I was on a podcast like this one with Mark Horseman from MindTools.com. He was making the point that CEOs and other executives, but CEOs, need to schedule their priorities. And we were talking about strategic planning and the fact that many people who do strategic planning don't ever enter the new activities into their calendar. Were there any CEOs who talked about the importance of taking a plan and then actually scheduling activity in their calendar to get it done,
mm-hmm.
in line with doing the right thing?
Wait, I didn't catch that question.
In their strategic planning, there's often a mistake that people don't actually take the activities that come from the retreat and schedule activities in their calendars to accomplish them.
You mean you go out and you sit around, you go out and brainstorm? And then
but it never translates into calendar activity.
Oh, well, the ones who are effective absolutely do plan it, yeah.
How do they do that?
Well, I mean, first of all...
Many of them have a problem with it.
Well, no, not at all, because you can't get anything done if you go around setting goals, right? And then you have to plan. Okay, so the first thing is you have to set the right goals, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I say you should have 2 or 3 priorities. That's it. Okay, mm-hmm. And most of the CEOs would agree with that. You would say you need about 2 or 3 priorities, and everything else is lower priority. And then once you set those goals, then you have to plan. And if you don't plan, you're not going to do it. It's simple. Mm-hmm. So you definitely have to plan it. Every one of them will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you plan it. And if you don't plan it, it's not going to get done. And once you plan it, then you have to do it. And by the way, the other notion is don't sit around thinking about your big goals. Only do that a few times a month. Instead, think about what you have in front of you now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have to go out and plan. No way. There's no way you can't do that. You can't get away with it. You won't get away without planning.
So do the effective ones then have weeks that, and this was Mark's point, that their average week looks like their priorities? There's a match between the activities that they're in, or the meetings that they call, or the...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So you got 1 or 2 big priorities, and you focus on those. So whatever you're doing during the week, it should have mostly your priorities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The next question then is, because I know that there are many CEOs who, and the reason they become CEOs is because, as you say, they do the right things over and over again, and it makes its way into their weekly schedule.
Yeah.
But many of their direct reports and low-level managers have yet to learn that lesson. Because they don't have the techniques that a CEO has,
right,
typically,
right,
when it comes to managing their time.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of questions then. Is that a concern of CEOs, and what were they doing about it?
Yeah, a lot of them. When you can, you try to build the right team, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't always build the right team because sometimes you inherit it, and sometimes people need help. Maybe they're brilliant in one area, but they're very bad with dealing with people, right? And that happens, you know. You have these, in the engineering jobs, you have somebody who's an absolute whiz, but doesn't know how to tie his shoes, you know, forgets to put on his pants in the morning. So you have to deal with that, right? Okay, so you have that. You have the people. So, but in general, when you build a team, you want to build a team of people who know how to manage their time, right? Unless they're brilliant in some other area, and that's right. That happens. So, that's a concern. And so they, you know, maybe some of them want their underlings to go to time management training.
Even at the executive level.
Absolutely. Look, the other thing that is universal among these people I talk to, and anybody, and by the way, since that book, I talked to CIOs, CFOs, CEOs, I've talked to lots, 100 more, because I write articles. I write for Forbes, I write for CIO UK, and I write for Inform IT, and I write about, and I have my own website, and I write about these things, and I interview people more, and it's universal that you have time management. It's not something you're an expert at. There's always something new you can learn. So it's not something. Most of them, if you ask them if they're good time managers, say no. But I'm trying to learn. But it's not.
They're not good, huh?
Right. But I tell you, if I get in front of me a set of students who are 19 years old, they say, "Are you good at managing your time?" They say, "Oh yeah, no problem." I tell you, if you tell
that's true.
You go out there and you ask people that are good at managing their time. I bet you. The ones who say they're not good, but they're learning, are the ones who are very good at it. And the ones who say, I'm good at it, no problem, are not the ones that are good at it. And in between, you have the people who said, I'm not good, but they don't say they're learning, you know. So, you know, anybody who says they're good at managing their time, is probably not doing a lot of thinking about it. You need to think, you need to keep on looking for ways of doing it. Things change. And it's a constant learning experience. So that's one of the reasons why I avoided this guru approach, because it's a non-defensible position to say, look at me, look how good I am. Because the other problem with that approach is that that's one, the sample space of one.
Right.
Okay, I prefer to have a sample space of 50, 100, 150, right? Plus psychology research. Because then you get a whole big view, you get a big cross section, and you can then say, okay, here's the commonality.
And you can draw principles rather than just patterns.
Yeah, you don't just say it's just one person. Everybody's weak in some area.
It's so interesting that as you say, time management skills you're not born with them. They have to be learned.
Right.
That you can get executives right up to maybe even I've actually seen CEOs who don't have the basic skills or even the basic concepts. That they really don't know what they don't know. But they think they're pretty good because they're so smart. They outsmart other people, and they equate time management with being smart. So because I'm smarter, therefore
I'm sure there's some of that.
I'm good at time management.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some of that, but I find that that's not the most effective approach. That's not a good attitude. First of all, it goes back to this performance-oriented attitude. Yeah. You know, you go. Yeah, I tell you, here's an example of that. If you notice in high school, the kid who seems to be the smartest kid in class, there's a test on Friday. Well, that kid goes out and gets drunk on Thursday night. Why? Because he wants an excuse for not doing well on the test. He doesn't want to lose the status of being the smartest in the class. That's called self-handicapping.
Wow.
So if you go through life saying I'm smart and I'm better than I'm innately more capable, then your ego's at stake. Your self-image is at stake. Because if somebody does something to prove that wrong, which will happen because the world is 7 billion people in the world, and there's always somebody who can do something better than you, well, then you're going to be in big trouble.
Wow, yeah. It's so interesting that CEOs take that learner stance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very, 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 very interesting.
Yeah.
You talked about things changing.
Yeah.
And one of course, the big changes, the big drivers of a CEO's productivity is technology.
Yeah.
So they're in meetings with, you know, people are armed to the teeth with smartphones, for example.
Yeah.
And there are many, 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 many companies that don't have any smartphone policies. So half of the executive team could be checking email while the CEO is, you know, making his impassioned plea to turn the company around. You know, I've seen it myself, and I'm sure you've seen it too. How are CEOs coping with, let's look at it at two levels. First thing, the impact on them personally. How is technology changing the way they manage their time, and what do they anticipate for the future?
Well, again, technology can help you be more efficient.
Yes.
Okay, but not necessarily be more effective. So some of them, there's variations, there are various levels of technology use. You know, it's like, it reminds me of the case where there was I don't know if you remember the company called Silicon Graphics.
Yes, sure do.
Okay, well, for a while there's a CEO who was really smart and everything. I think it was in the 1990s, early 90s. And he would go out and help the workers on the assembler line. And he would show how he could help everybody. He would do everybody's, he would go out and do it. But that, but while he was doing that, he wasn't running the company, right?
Mm.
So the point is not to go out and prove you can do everybody's job. The point is you want to be constantly releasing stuff to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to be doing all the work, because you got to be thinking about, you want to make your job is to make the organization work. Your job is not to be the smartest person who's best at running, using their smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your job is not to use your smartphone well, it's not to use your calendar well. Your job is to pick the right team and make sure the organization works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, as far as, so the CEOs are not supposed to be the best at anything except making sure the organization works.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, in terms of meetings, well, the smart ones know that, the effective ones know that multitasking, you can't think of two things at once, okay? And if you don't believe me, try talking to one person on the phone and writing an email to another person at the same time. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so you can't be reading your email and attending a meeting. You can't do it. So the ones that I find the most effective are the ones who say, everybody turn off their smartphones and their laptops during the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're going to meet. This is our meeting time. And the meetings would be like a maximum of an hour and a half. You don't want to have long meetings. All-day meetings are useless. So a meeting for about an hour and a half, turn off your smartphones and your laptops, let's do the meeting, let's get, and when we're finished, we write the minutes, and we say what we agree, and we take action.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't use our smartphones or laptops in meetings. We don't tolerate that.
Are they talking much about the effect of smartphones? Not necessarily in the meetings that they're in, but the meetings that happen around the company. So they may say smartphones off, laptops off, but their meeting might be the only one in which the person who calls the meeting enforces that kind of rule. Every other meeting in the company might have half of the room multitasking at any point in time.
Yeah.
Do they talk about that as a concern, and have they put in policies in place to address the productivity of all people in the company?
Yes, some of them have. And one this is independent of the CEO discussions I had. Another company I know implemented a policy where an hour every day, like between 10 and 11, nobody was to do anything other than one task by themselves. They weren't to use email, phone, or smartphones. Okay?
Really?
And that turned out to be extremely popular, because it allowed everybody to concentrate on one thing, focused effort. And so focused effort, if you can achieve focused effort, that's very powerful. Because when you're interrupted from a task, it takes you about 20 minutes to get back to 100% capacity.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. According to the flow state and Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, unfortunately, Pat, we're at the end of our time together.
Okay.
We chased through a whole bunch of different topics, all related to the CEO and the way that they manage their time and their productivity.
Yeah.
And I really want to thank you for coming on our podcast. How can people get a hold of you to ask you questions directly or interact with your book? Where can they purchase your book?
Okay. So my book is called Master the Moment, 50 CEOs Teach You the Secrets of Time Management. Pat Brand is the author, and myself. And I have a website called Master the Moment, and I have a Forbes column called Master the Moment. And my email address is pdbrans@gmail.com. Now, I also write for Inform IT and CIO UK. You can see my articles. Just look up my name online, and you'll see my articles. And my book can be purchased at anything online, Amazon.com, Amazon. Is there a Jamaica site for Amazon?
Sure. Well, no, not a specific site. We use the one in the US,
okay.
And the UK.
Okay. So there you go. So Amazon.UK is there too, yeah. So it's anywhere you can buy books online.
Fabulous, fabulous. And I'm going to encourage our readers listeners to get your book. Check your website. I do enjoy reading your columns on Forbes. There's multiple ways to get in touch with your ideas. And there's not too many people out there who are interviewing CEOs. I think you're it.
Really?
So if anyone wants to really find out what
the
most effective people in companies are doing,
yeah,
this is the place to find it.
Right.
Out.
Well, you know, there's one thing I want to ask you, Francis, before we
sure. get off.
I want you to invite me to Jamaica to come speak. Because I haven't been to Jamaica before.
I think it's time.
Okay, we'll talk about that offline.
There's a couple of conferences that you could come to. It would be great.
Great.
Okay, well, Pat Brands, thanks for coming on our Two-Time Loud podcast, and all the best. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it was great having Pat on our show. I wanted to let you know about a couple of things that are coming up this year in the June timeframe. The first is the International Coaches Federation Conference. It's the largest coaches conference in North America. It's going to be in June. And I'm actually going to be speaking at the conference in Cleveland on June 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st. I'm actually speaking on Friday evening. So if you're in the area or if you have an interest in coaching people who are dealing with time-based productivity issues, this would be a great opportunity to come and hear me live and speaking to a group of really great people. I've been to a coaching federation conference. I think it was many years ago, but it was in Phoenix, I think, Arizona, and had a wonderful time. I'm anticipating that this is going to be an awesome event also. So check it out on the internet. And also, that event will be the first time I'll be unveiling my new book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity, which I'm actually still writing as we speak. I'm intending to get it done before the conference, have it available there for those who attend. But this is a how to do time management 2.0, you know, under the larger umbrella of time-based productivity. And it's a perfect companion to Bill's Imperfect Time Management Adventure, which you know is a novel. This one is a straight how do you improve your time-based productivity? What are the steps? What are the distinctions, and what's the knowledge that you need, and what does the research tell you should focus on and what you should avoid? It's using a great deal of, as you can imagine, all the latest research, and it's going to be available in early June. So until next time, take care. This is Francis signing out from the Two Time Labs podcast. All the best.